Tonight, we are beginning a very important chapter in our book. So, why don't you please welcome Ari, and we're going to get into it.
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic named Ari. And tonight, we're going to read We Agnostics. And whilst we were getting ready, I looked up the dictionary definition of agnostic, which is claims neither faith in nor disbelief in God. Synonyms are doubter, skeptic, or non-believer, whereas an atheist claims they can prove the non-existence of God. So keep those in mind. The very first chapter, first paragraph of We Agnostics, I was taught, is a very good way to help someone remind themselves of whether or not they think they're an alcoholic. It also really takes away the, did you drink as much as I drink, or did I drink as much as you drank, or did we have the same physical story? So I like to keep that in mind when reading this. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. So here's the test. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness, which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Now, if I were going to rewrite this book, I would say, if that be the case, you are suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Other than that, it's a lobotomy. I've never known anyone who's recovered from alcoholism without having a spiritual experience. And I've never known anyone who had a lobotomy either. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he is an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. Now, I spoke last week, and I've spoken before, about how some people get to AA, and it seems like they don't have to do what I have to do. And it's not fair, because I have to work hard, and I have to be honest, and I have to make amends, because I was a jerk to someone the other day, and that means I have to make amends to someone I don't like, and I have to do all these things, and I've been doing them for a long time, and I feel like I should get a break at some point for good behavior or something. And the thing is that I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, which means that I have to live my life on a spiritual basis, not just to get sober, but to stay sober and to continue to live sober the rest of my life. People sometimes get here who are non-alcoholics of the hopeless variety. Sometimes they're hard drinkers, and they don't have to do what I do. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face, hence my mountain of 90-day pins. But it isn't so difficult. About half of our original fellowship were of exactly that type, so they're either agnostic or atheist. Hoping against hope, we were not true alcoholics. I'm sorry, at first some of us tried to avoid the issue. Hoping against hope, we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it is going to be that way with you. But cheer up. Something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. I love that line because, you know, I'm a good person. I've never really hurt anybody. My drinking doesn't bother anyone but me. That mere code of morals, that, you know, I might not believe in a God, but I've never really done anything wrong either. Or a better philosophy for life. I'm going to do transcendental meditation. I'm going to be a whatever. You know, if it was just enough to, you know, kind of adopt a new set of beliefs and maybe think a little differently, if that could change the way that I drank, then the 11 different religions I waded into. Like, I was born Jewish. I tried Catholicism, Buddhism, Wicca. I don't even remember how many different. I looked at becoming Orthodox Jewish, which I was not brought up that way and really could never do because I don't want that many kids. Like all these things I tried, and they were excellent philosophies and codes of morals, but they didn't help me stop drinking, and I would give up because it just didn't work. We found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. So marshaled, they're talking about if we with all our might, we grabbed our bootstraps and pulled them up, and we tried really, really hard, the best we could do was just not enough. So here's the deal. Lack of power. That was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. Now, you know why that's in italics, because that's really important. Obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? I'm going to say that again. Lack of power. That was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. So at this point, by the time, I've gotten to this point in the book, I've been thoroughly convinced that my way doesn't work. I've been thoroughly convinced that I cannot change the way I drink, change what I drink, change where I drink, change the people I associate with, and have a different outcome. I'm convinced that my way doesn't work. That's really all this meant for me. I did not have the power to find a way that I could drink successfully. Well, luckily, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. So just to be clear, if you're taking someone through the book, it is not to find a boyfriend or a girlfriend. It's not to clear up your financial struggles. It is not to fix whatever problems you have at work or your marriage or whatever you've done in your life that's screwed up. It is to find a power greater than yourself which will solve your problem. That means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we're going to talk about God. In AA, yes, we're going to talk about God. And sometimes people don't like that. And that's okay, because I had this friend that used to say, if God scares you out of AA, alcohol will scare you back in. It did for me. Here, difficulty arises with agnostics, who, again, are skeptics and doubters. Many times we talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcoholic problems and explain our fellowship. But his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God, for we have reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or entirely ignored. So, hang on, I need a sip of this coffee. We know how he feels. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. So prejudice is prejudgment. We are judging the situation or the idea of a higher power or God based on old ideas, which we're going to be told we have to let go of, or previous experience. Some of us have been violently anti-religious. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him or her with which someone had tried to impress them during childhood. Perhaps we rejected this particular conception because it seemed inadequate. I know that for myself, there's a lot of people that I've run across, and I was this way too, that I thought that I was too bad for God. That I had done such horrible things that God would never accept me. And so I have to say that as I go through We Agnostics with the people that I work with, and when I talk to the people that I've sponsored about taking other people through We Agnostics, I really weigh heavily back on that part of Bill's story where it talks about choosing your own conception of God. And there's a list of adjectives, and judgmental is not on my list of adjectives that describes my higher power, which is good, because that's not what I need. With that rejection, we imagined we had abandoned the God idea entirely. We were bothered with the thought that faith and dependence upon a power beyond ourselves was somewhat weak and even cowardly, which is pretty weird coming from someone who's dependent on alcohol. We looked upon this world of warring individuals, warring theological systems, and inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism, And amazingly, that is still so true today, still so incredibly true. We looked askance at many individuals who claimed to be godly. God help me not to say any presidential candidates' names now. How could a supreme being have anything to do with it all? And who could comprehend a supreme being anyhow? Yet in other moments, we found ourselves thinking, when enchanted by a starlit night, who then made all this? There was a feeling of awe and wonder, but it was fleeting and soon lost. Yes, we of agnostic temperament have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe, so you don't have to believe, you have to be willing to believe, in a power greater than ourselves, we commence to get results. So you don't actually have to do anything except be willing to believe, and you're going to get results. Even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God. And I'm so glad that it says that. I was at a meeting very early in this last round of sobriety, which hopefully will be my last round of sobriety, thank God, or please God, where I heard a woman say from the podium, God, as she will never understand him. Because how can my tiny little finite human mind understand the creator of the universe? And I really like that, because if I stay in that place, I'm not trying to like anthropomorphize or give God my crappy human qualities like judgment, pettiness, you know, small-mindedness. Because if I make God like me, I lose. You know, God wasn't made in my image. You know, I was like a tiny offshoot of the divineness that is, you know, God. And I say God because I'm ultra lazy. I don't have a specific religious God that I'm speaking of. It's my higher power, but I say God because that takes a lot less time. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Yay! Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. So if all you know is that you don't want your higher power to be the one you grew up with, or the one that guy over there has, or hers, that's okay. That's all you need to know. I knew someone who didn't know who they wanted their higher power to be, so she used to get on her knees and be like, all right, listen, God, you MF-er. If you're even out there, could you please keep me sober today? And like 28 years later, she now has a beautiful relationship with her higher power, and she's still sober. And in the beginning, she was just like, I don't know if you're there. I don't know if you're real, and I think you suck if you are. But I'm going to pray anyway, because that's what she was told to do. And the thing is that, you know, because our higher power is not human, you know, he, she, it could take it. You know, it doesn't matter if we're pissed at God. God doesn't care. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. So that's a second step promise, right? As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. So there's stuff we have to do. But if we're willing to believe, things start to change, which is, like, crazy. Because, like, 3 pages ago, we're powerless. We can't make the right choice, and we have no defense against the first drink. And now we're willing to believe something different, and stuff's happening. Like, we feel different than we did for... Hold on. Let me not lie. 4 pages ago, we had no defense against the first drink, and now we feel different. That's pretty quick. Okay, this is my favorite line in the entire big book, and I'm not making it up. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. I always cry when I read this. It is open, we believe, to all men. I think those were the most important words our founders ever wrote. Because that, to me, means that in whatever way I can approach God, in whatever way that, whether I'm on my knees cursing or I can just say, God, please help me. If those are the only words I can utter in prayer, that's enough. If I go three steps, my God will meet me the rest of the way if that's the best I can do. If that's all I've got when I get here, that's enough. And that there is no way to approach the realm of the Spirit that is not acceptable to God. And for people that have no experience entering that realm, that acceptance, that beautiful welcome is so powerful. I truly believe that I was too dirty and beat up and worthless to even step into that world where God was. And when I was first read these books by these words by my sponsor, my whole life changed. Like, literally my whole life changed. And when I sit in a meeting and I hear people share that their way to God is the only way to God, I raise my hand and I share this. Because it's not fair. Because not everybody finds God the same way. Not everybody. Some people have to use the rooms, the people in the rooms first. And some people have to use their sponsors, God. And some people have to have their own bitter experiences of not using any God at all until they have no choice. And this is, it's not for us to say how other people find their own path to God. It's just that God is waiting when we're ready. And so if I didn't say anything for all the weeks I'm here except this will be the most important thing I say. When therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies to other spiritual expressions which you may find in this book. Do not let any prejudice, judgment, you may have against spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth. So just being willing to get in the conversation was where spiritual growth began, to affect our first conscious relation with God as we understood him. Afterward, we found ourselves accepting many things which seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth. But if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? That's an interesting question. I know that the police are greater than me. Also, I know that there are times that a group of people very angry at me have been greater than me. I also know that, there's a power greater than me contained in alcohol that sometimes it wins and I black out and I don't know what happens and that's greater than me. So there are definitely different powers that are greater than me. I just really never thought about admitting that there was a power greater than myself. And looking back over my life and in some of the things I discussed with my sponsor about my first step, I also saw instances where there's absolutely no reason that I should have escaped unscathed from certain situations where I really shouldn't have lived. Like, I just shouldn't have lived. And there was no explanation for me living except that there was something else at work. Although, you know, I've fought about that in the beginning, and we'll talk about it a little bit more. Always forget to turn this to mute. I'm sorry. We need to have... As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing, just willing to believe, we emphatically assure him he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. So here we have an asterisk, which takes us to the spiritual appendix, the appendix to the spiritual experience, which you're going to flip to now, which is on page 183 in this book. I don't know what book it's, what it, this is not maybe completely the same book. It may be on a different page. 567? 567 in the full version. Everybody there? All right. Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet, it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among a rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is a proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Now, I just want to say that it's funny, you stick around for a little while in AA, you get a couple years behind you, and then you meet people, new people. And they think you've always been, I meet women and they're like, oh, but it's always been easy for you and you've always been like this. And I'm like, yeah, not so much. You know, I had a white light experience after, you know, 14 years of almost dying, trying to get sober. I had a spiritual awakening of the educational variety, you know, that was encapsulated into, you know, one moment of clarity. But it took me a long time to get there. And, you know, we all have moments of clarity and we all have these experiences. And it's kind of like I banged my head against the brick wall, not until the wall broke, but till my head broke. And there was room for, you know, light to shine in. And it's funny because my home group meeting was on this concept yesterday. And, you know, it's so important to allow people to see me, I think, and for all of us to allow people to see us, you know, on a continuum, that we didn't start out where we are. Because the idea that everyone's had a spiritual experience and now you, Mr. or Miss Newcomer, like, you know, you guys just have to figure it out, like, you know, just keep coming until the miracle happens, it's not really. You know, yeah, keep coming till the miracle happens. But, you know, I got to that spiritual experience because I took certain actions. And most of those actions were based around doing the work in this book. So let us flip back to page 47 in We Agnostics, right at the bottom, or the last paragraph. That was great news for us, for we had assumed we could not make use of spiritual principles unless we accepted many things on faith which seemed difficult to believe, because we're black and white thinkers and we think we're either, you know, making a pilgrimage to the religious, you know, center of our choice, or we don't believe anything at all. When people presented us with spiritual approaches, how frequently did we all say, I wish I had what that man has. I'm sure it would work if I could only believe as he believes. But I cannot accept as surely true the many articles of faith which are so plain to him. So it was comforting to learn that we could commence at a simpler level. Besides a seeming inability to accept much on faith, we often found ourselves handicapped by obstinacy, that's stubbornness, sensitiveness, and unreasoning prejudice. Many of us have been so touchy that even casual reference to spiritual things made us bristle with antagonism. This sort of thinking had to be abandoned. Though some of us resisted, we found no great difficulty in casting aside such feelings. Faced with alcoholic destruction, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. Now that's a very, very mellow way of saying, I banged my head against the wall till it cracked open and the light came in. You know, faced with alcoholic destruction, no, like, I was going to die, so I became open-minded. That's really what I would say in that place. In this respect, alcohol was a great persuader. Yes, it was. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness, the brick wall. Sometimes this was a tedious process. Very tedious. We hope no one else will be prejudiced for as long as some of us were. Some people are prejudiced so long, they never make it. I'm sure that if you're an alcoholic, that you have been sober long enough or been drinking long enough to have attended the funeral of someone else who died from this disease, or to have at least heard of one. And it's such a mystery how come some people can grasp this and some people can't. If this was a program, you know, we hear it all the time, for the people who needed it, we'd be in an auditorium like, you know, the Prudential Center, and there'd be lines out the door. The reader may still ask why he should believe in a power greater than himself. We think there are good reasons. Let us have a look at some of them. The practical individual of today is a stickler for facts and results. Nevertheless, the 20th century readily accepts theories of all kinds, provided they are firmly grounded in fact. We have numerous theories, for example, about electricity. Everybody believes them without a murmur of doubt. Why this ready acceptance? Simply because it is impossible to explain what we see, feel, direct, and use without a reasonable assumption as a starting point. Everybody nowadays believes in scores of assumptions for which there is good evidence but no perfect visual proof. It would have been a lot harder to do this, you know, this whole thing with the big book if Google was around. I'm just, you know, like, people would have been a lot more skeptical, but thank God it started before there was Google. And does not science demonstrate that visual proof is the weakest proof? It is being constantly revealed as mankind studies the material world that outward appearances are not inward reality at all. To illustrate, the prosaic steel girder is a mass of electrons whirling around each other at incredible speed. These tiny bodies are governed by precise laws, and these laws hold true throughout the material world. Science tells us so. We have no reason to doubt it. When, however, the perfectly logical assumption is suggested that underneath the material world and life as we see it, there is an all-powerful, guiding, creative intelligence. Right there, our perverse streak comes to the surface, and we laboriously set out to convince ourselves it isn't so. We read wordy books and indulge in windy arguments, thinking we believe this universe needs no God to explain it. Were our contentions true, it would follow that life originated out of nothing, means nothing, and proceeds nowhere. And people have made careers out of trying to make that stick. And, you know, I guess it's all about intellectual exercises and conversations and what people believe. And, you know, I know people who came to AA and, you know, just basically have, their lives have continued to deteriorate because they're so intellectually egotistical that they're just completely unwilling to even make room for the idea, never mind be willing to believe. Instead of regarding ourselves as intelligent agents, spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation, we agnostics and atheists choose to believe that our human intelligence was the last word, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and end of all. Rather vain of us, wasn't it? We who have traveled this dubious path beg you to lay aside prejudice, even against organized religion. We have learned that whatever the human frailties of various faiths may be, and we know more now than they did when they wrote this book, that those faiths, Those faiths have given purpose and direction to millions. People of faith have a logical idea of what life is all about. Actually, we used to have no reasonable conception whatever. We used to amuse ourselves by cynically dissecting spiritual beliefs and practices when we might have observed that many spiritually minded persons of all races, colors, and creeds were demonstrating a degree of stability and happiness and usefulness which we should have sought ourselves. I imagine that's a harder argument to have today. I haven't come across anyone recently that I've sponsored who wanted to have that argument about how much damage organized religion has done. I hope I don't anytime soon because I'm not sure what my defense would be. I did once have someone that I sponsored who just really was so dynamically argumentative about how do you know, and I said, listen, worst case scenario, there's no God, and there's no, God doesn't exist, and I'm making a fool of myself, and so is everyone else who believes that there is a God. What am I losing? Like, what have I got to lose? What if I believe and there's nothing, and this is all the joke's on me? My life's so awesome because I believe in a God that solves all my problems. I'm really not worried about how it looks at the end. And that was an effective answer. It really, really was. It was an effective answer because if I'm believing in unicorns and fairy dust, and unicorns and fairy dust are helping me to live my life sober a day at a time and with peace and serenity, and I can be of use to other people and a positive force for good in the world, then all right, unicorns and fairy dust it is. Instead, we looked at the human defects of these people and sometimes used their shortcomings as a basis of wholesale condemnation. We talked of intolerance while we were intolerant ourselves. We missed the reality and the beauty of the forest because we were diverted by the ugliness of some of its trees. We never gave the spiritual side of life a fair hearing. In our personal stories, you will find a wide variation in the way each teller approaches and conceives of the power which is greater than himself. Whether we agree with a particular approach or conception seems to make little difference. Experience has taught us that these are matters about which, for our purpose, we need not be worried. They are questions for each individual to settle for himself. On one proposition, however, these men and women are strikingly agreed. Every one of them has gained access to and believes in a power greater than himself. This power has, in each case, accomplished the miraculous, the humanly impossible. As a celebrated American statesman put it, let's look at the record. Here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. They flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude toward that power and to do certain simple things, there has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of the total failure of their human resources, they found that a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. That's another promise. So, in the face of collapse and despair, I began to believe in a power greater than myself, and I found new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into me. Pretty cool. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. I did have to work the steps. Once confused and baffled by the seeming futility of existence, they showed the underlying reasons why they were making heavy going of life. Leaving aside the drink question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. They show how the change came over them. When many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. This world of ours has made more material progress in the last century than in all the millenniums which went before, if they could only see us now. Almost everyone knows the reason. Students of ancient history tell us that the intellect of men in those days was equal to the best of today. Yet in ancient times, material progress was painfully slow. The spirit of modern scientific inquiry, research, and invention was almost unknown. In the realm of the material, men's minds were fettered by superstition, tradition, and all sorts of fixed ideas. Some of the contemporaries of Columbus thought a round earth preposterous. Others came near putting Galileo to death for his astronomical heresies. We asked ourselves this. Are not some of us just as biased and unreasonable about the realm of the spirit as were the ancients about the realm of the material? Even in the present century, American newspapers were afraid to print an account of the Wright brothers' first successful flight at Kitty Hawk. Had not all efforts at flight failed before? Did not Professor Langley's flying machine go to the bottom of the Potomac River? Was it not true that the best mathematical minds had proved a man could never fly? Had not people said God reserved his privilege to the birds? Only 30 years later, the conquest of the air was almost an old story, and airplane travel was in full swing. But in most fields, our generation has witnessed complete liberation of our thinking. Show any longshoreman a Sunday supplement describing a proposal to explore the moon by means of a rocket, and he will say, I bet they do it. Maybe not so long, either. Is not our age characterized by the ease with which we discard old ideas for new, by the complete readiness with which we throw away the theory or gadget which does not work for something new which does? We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with Let me stop here. I was the person who got the new phone, the new car, the new computer, but having a new idea, the new haircut, the new hair color, the new fashion, definitely the new fashion. But having a new idea about the way I solved my problems in life, no thank you. It was me and the brick wall all the time. So here on page 52, when we get to the middle, we have to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems this paragraph. Right in that second sentence, they call these the bedevilments. And this is the barometer of where I am spiritually in my program and an exercise that was shared with me by my sponsor and that I share with the women that I sponsor or other people when they ask me, I don't know why I feel this way. And if I answer yes to more than one of these questions, there's something wrong, like with me. Like I'm not turning something over to God, and I have to see what area that is. And we'll talk about that more in step three, but I just wanted to point that out here on page 52, that these are the bedevilments that we are bedeviled by when we are not, you know, spiritually straight. So we were having trouble with personal relationships. So just think about this. I'll talk about it when I was drinking. We were having trouble with personal relationships. I barely had any. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. Mm-hmm. Couldn't make a living. Well, we had a feeling of uselessness. Uh-huh. Full of fear. Not when I drank. We were unhappy all the time. Couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Not like I cared. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? I missed the entire first Iraq war when I was drinking. I didn't even know what happened until it was over. I didn't care. Like the newsreel of lunar flight. What? Of course it was. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. Mm-hmm. The Wright brothers' almost childish faith that they could build a machine which would fly was the mainspring of their accomplishment. Without that, nothing could have happened. We agnostics and atheists were sticking to the idea that self-sufficiency would solve our problems. When others showed us that God's sufficiency worked with them, we began to feel like those who had insisted the Wrights would never fly. Logic is great stuff. We liked it. We still like it. It is not by chance we were given the power to reason, to examine the evidence of our senses, and to draw conclusions. That is one of man's magnificent attributes. Hold on. We agnostically inclined would not feel satisfied with a proposal which does not lend itself to reasonable approach and interpretation. Hence, we are at pains to tell why we think our present faith is reasonable, why we think it more sane and logical to believe than not to believe, why we say our former thinking was soft and mushy when we threw up our hands in doubt and said, we don't know. This is a very important paragraph. When we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, we could not postpone or evade. We had to fearlessly face the proposition that God is everything or else he is nothing. God either is or he isn't. What was our choice to be? So the self-imposed crisis was that I couldn't stop drinking and I couldn't solve my own problems. And it got to the point as my alcoholism progressed, because it's a progressive disease, that I could no longer go on as I was. And I couldn't evade the consequences, and I couldn't like cool off for a bit. It was I had to face it at that particular moment. God bless you. And the solution was proposed to me now many, many times, hence the 90-day bins. It had been proposed to me, and I was at the place where I was going to say, either God is everything, either I'm going to turn my will and my life over to God, I'm going to believe that your AA God is going to restore me to sanity, or I'm going to die and or just live this miserable alcoholic life. And that was my first decision. Now, I've had many, many more times where I've had a situation and I've been like, well, either God is everything or God is nothing, or I'm going to believe that everything's going to be the way it's supposed to be in God's world, or I'm not, and I'm going to suffer. And that happens pretty much every day in one way or another. I think whether or not I decide to engage in fear and try and control, or I just am like, okay, I'm going to do what's in front of me, you know, the next indicated action, and let the world unfold. But in this moment, at the first time that this was read to me, when I was, you know, approaching step two for the first time, I was crushed by a self-imposed crisis that completely involved alcohol and whether or not I was going to drink again, or and whether or not I was going to believe that God could solve my problem, or I was going to keep trying to do the brick wall thing with my head. And when I think about today, God is everything or he's nothing, that means that if God is everything, that everything in my life, even the stuff I hate, is the way it's supposed to be. And if God is, you know, if God is nothing, then I'm really in trouble. Arrived at this point, we were squarely confronted with a question of faith. We couldn't duck the issue. Some of us had already walked far over the bridge of reason toward the desired shore of faith. The outlines and the promise of the new land had brought luster to tired eyes and fresh courage to flagging spirits. Friendly hands had stretched out in welcome. We were grateful that reason had brought us so far. So my wonderful intellect and my reasoning had got me to this point, but somehow we couldn't quite step ashore, so I could think my way. That self-knowledge they talked about in More About Alcoholism could only get me to a certain point, and I just had to throw my hands up and say, I can't do the rest on my own. Perhaps we had been leaning too heavily on reason that last mile or thousand, and we didn't like to lose our support. That was natural, but let us think a little more closely. Without knowing it, had we not been brought to where we stood by a certain kind of faith? For did we not believe in our own reasoning? Check. Did we not have confidence in our ability to think? Check, check. Was that but a sort of faith? Yeah. Yes, we had been faithful, abjectly faithful, to the God of reason. So in one way or another, we discovered that faith had been involved all the time. We found, too, that we had been worshippers. What a state of mental goose flesh that used to bring on. Had we not variously worshipped people, sentiment, things, money, and ourselves? And then with a better motive, had we not worshipfully beheld the sunset, the sea, or a flower? Who of us had not loved something or somebody? How much did these feelings, these loves, these worships have to do with pure reason? Little or nothing, we saw at last. Were not these things the tissue out of which our lives were constructed? Did not these feelings, after all, determine the course of our existence? It was impossible to say we had no capacity for faith or love or worship. In one form or another, we had been living by faith and little else. I had faith that if I drank enough of whatever I was drinking, that I would feel a certain way. I did. I had faith if I mixed it with certain dry goods, I'd feel even better. And I had faith that if I drove slow enough and covered one eye, I wouldn't hit anything. You know? And I guess that was true because I didn't. Imagine life without faith. Were nothing left but pure reason, we'd all be Data from Star Trek. It wouldn't be life. It would be empty. It would be dry. Nobody likes, you know, the reason that people read more fiction than nonfiction is because nonfiction can be kind of boring. We could not prove life in the sense that you can prove a straight line is the shortest distance between two points, yet there it was. Could we still say the whole thing was nothing but a mass of electrons, created out of nothing, meaning nothing, whirling on to a destiny of nothingness? Of course we couldn't. The electrons themselves seemed more intelligent than that. At least so the chemist said. Hence we saw that reason isn't everything. Neither is reason, as most of us use it, entirely dependable, even though it emanate from our best minds. What about people who proved that man could never fly? Yet we had been seeing another kind of flight, a spiritual liberation from this world. People who rose above their problems. They said God made these things possible, and we only smiled. We had seen spiritual release, but liked to tell ourselves it wasn't true. Actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. So when I was 16 and the pain really began for me, I read the entire Old Testament and the entire New Testament, because even before I knew what the answer was, what the question was, before I knew I was alcoholic, I knew the answer was going to be God. I don't know how I knew the answer. I just was looking for something. I have to tell you that Old Testament is a tough read. And I didn't find the answer right away. But I don't know what possessed me to do it. I knew the answer, that the fundamental idea of God was within me. I just didn't know how to uncover it yet. It was obscured. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, mostly myself. But in some form or other, it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves, miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are fact as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there, and it doesn't have to be he if you don't want it to. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only there that he may be found. It was so with us. And that's why it's so important that realm of the spirit is broad and roomy, so that everybody can find their own great reality without feeling judged. We can only clear the ground a bit. If our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself, then if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. In this book, you will read the experience of a man who thought he was an atheist. His story is so interesting that some of it should be told now. His change of heart was dramatic, convincing, and moving. Our friend was a minister's son. He attended church school, where he became rebellious at what he thought was an overdose of religious education. For years thereafter, he was dogged by trouble and frustration. Business failure, insanity, fatal illness, suicide, these calamities in his immediate family embittered and depressed him. Post-war disillusionment, ever more serious alcoholism, impending mental and physical collapse brought him to the point of self-destruction. One night when confined in a hospital, he was approached by an alcoholic who had known a spiritual experience. Our friend's gorge rose as he bitterly cried out, "If there is a God, he certainly hasn't done anything for me." But later, alone in his room, he asked himself this question. And I'm pretty sure that it was really like that inner God voice. Is it possible that all the religious people I have known are wrong? While pondering the answer, he felt as though he lived in hell. Then, like a thunderbolt, a great thought came. It crowded out all else. Who are you to say there is no God? This man recounts that he tumbled out of bed to his knees. In a few seconds, he was overwhelmed by a conviction of the presence of God. It poured over and through him with the certainty and majesty of a great tide at flood. The barriers he had built through the years were swept away. He stood in the presence of infinite power and love. He had stepped from bridge to shore. For the first time, he lived in conscious companionship with his Creator. I love to hear higher power described as infinite power and love. That's all I need, really. I don't need anything more than that. I don't need the winning lottery numbers. I just need infinite power and love. Thus was our friend's cornerstone fixed into place. So a belief in a higher power, a consciousness of a higher power, is the cornerstone of our recovery. No later vicissitude, as trouble, has shaken it. His alcoholic problem was taken away that very night years ago. It disappeared. Save for a few brief moments of temptation, the thought of drink has never returned, and at such times, a great revulsion has risen up in him. Seemingly, he could not drink even if he would. God had restored his sanity. What is this but a miracle of healing? Yet its elements are simple. Circumstances made him willing to believe, so he banged his head against the brick wall till there was a crack. He humbly offered himself to his Maker, and the light shone down. Then he knew. Even so, God has restored us all to our right minds. To this man, the revelation was sudden, or not, depending on who you ask. Some of us grow into it more slowly, but he has come to all who have honestly sought him. When we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. So this is, I think that this step two and this chapter is really the linchpin for, it was for me, and I think it is in my experience, because if I'm going to really kind of, first of all, I need a higher power to turn my will and my life over to, so with step three coming next, and then if I'm going to start kind of digging and doing step four and doing inventory, if that's what's going to happen, I have to have a higher power that I have, that I feel that, you know, infinite power and love from, and that I feel that presence, or at least am willing to. I have to feel like I'm going towards something. And at first, before I'm going towards people, I needed to feel like there was a safe place. And, you know, my higher power was a safe presence for me. And it was manifested through my sponsor and a few other women in the program who I felt were kind of reflected their own higher powers back to me. That I could talk about my own personal philosophy, but that really isn't important. This was tremendously important, and I'm just about out of time. So next week we're going to start how it works. I don't know exactly how far we're going to get, but I would suggest you bring a notebook and a pen. And that's all I have tonight. So thank you for letting me share.